How you doing there? Just a quickie before we start. On the Apple podcast, why don't you double click on David McWilliams Plus? It's right there when you open the podcast. You get ad-free, you unlock early access. Just double click and away you go. David McWilliams Plus. You get this pure and...
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Simple.
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How are you doing there? It is podcast time. The podcast you're listening to has been banned by Vladimir Putin.
By himself.
Last Friday, he had a good listen. And so unfortunately, to our listeners in the Russian Federation, we are very, very sorry that we are banned in the Russian Federation, but we hope that in the future you will be able to hear us again. Now, John,
yes,
today
yes.
We're going to do the title of the podcast. It's going to be that uplifting title called The Doom Loop.
Oh, lovely, Mac.
And what we're going to we're going to look at the global financial markets, okay? And particularly the bond market, and see what has happened in the UK this week. And we're going to go into the weeds of what happened in the UK.
Yeah.
Could happen anywhere. Not will happen, but could happen anywhere. And the lessons from 2008 was that a small little problem in what was called subprime in August 2007, which was dismissed by everybody, particularly Bear Stearns, the bank that actually owned these assets. Said, no, don't worry, it's a small thing. Subprime in Arizona or somewhere, you know, somewhere down there in the Sunbelt states, within a year took down the entire global financial system. And the reason is what we call leverage contagion, people borrowed, et cetera, cross-collateralized, all that stuff. So that's what we're going to talk about. But before I go, before we start, Kilkenomics, Ross O'Carroll Kelly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, go on.
Has confirmed that he's going to basically save the global economy.
Oh, totally.
Ross O'Carroll, it's going to be called Affluenza. The Economics of Ross O'Carroll Kelly, just confirmed on Kilkenomics. Also, the fantastic English comedian Rosie Holt. Do you know her? She's brilliant. She's just confirmed
fantastic.
As well. So we've got
brilliant.
One of the greatest economist in the world is a Korean guy called Ha Jung Chang. And he writes this extraordinary, he's written amazing books. One of the great books was 23 Things They Don't Tell You About Capitalism, which is a deconstruction of capitalism. And he's basically...
I knew the name.
Brilliant.
I read that,
Really good guy. He's now got a new book out called Edible Economics, where he's taking economics and food and putting them together. And we have him being interviewed by Ross Lewis, the Michelin star chef Chapter One. So you've got the chef and the economist talking about the similarities. And it's all about kind of culture and food and where it comes from, the way the economy's worked. So that'll be great. Anyway, that is Kilkenomics. Get your tickets. They're flying out the door, kilkenomics.com.
And don't forget, we're doing a live podcast. And
don't forget, I think we could even be nearly sold out. So check out that one. It's your man and myself, Friday night in the Ormond Hotel, I believe, Kilkenny. Kilkenomics.com. Hope to see you there. It's a total hoot. And you know what? We might all learn something as well. It's even better. Now, John.
David.
On the 15th of December, 2021, we sat down to do a podcast. And it was announced that morning that a musician that you are very partial to, Bruce Springsteen,
yes, indeed,
had sold his entire back catalogue to Sony for between $500 and $600 million. Okay, the quantum wasn't revealed. And at the time I was saying, I don't really like Bruce Springsteen. However, we did make the point, and Paul McCulley was on that day, was it the case that Bruce Springsteen was the most savvy bond investor in the world? And we made the point that maybe he was.
Yes.
Because there were clouds beginning to emerge, dark clouds, right? Bruce Springsteen is the George Soros of rock and roll, okay? The deal was extraordinary.
That's why they call him the boss, man.
He was the boss. He's the boss of the markets.
Yeah.
Nobody timed the bond market like Bruce Springsteen. Fucking chapeau to Bruce Springsteen. I'll explain why, right? So the Sony valued Bruce Springsteen's, and this is all to do with what we're about to talk about now, which is the bond market, how it works. It's going to be a little bit technical today, but we need to understand it because I think we're in for a very rocky time in the next while. And what really pisses me off, right, is that when interest rates were zero, do you remember?
Yeah.
And we kept saying that Ireland should refinance everything.
Yeah, we did.
And we kept saying, refinance everything, issue a perpetual bond.
Sort out the housing and
do all the whole thing. Yeah. 2 years ago when interest rates were zero. Now interest rates will be 4-5%, and we've missed the opportunity. And why? Because people, they didn't listen to the podcast, obviously, but because they don't fucking act. Sometimes the market gives you an opportunity. You can refinance yourself completely. You can put the risk onto investors. You can say, okay, your problem now. Because once you've sold the bond, you as the seller doesn't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
And yet, okay, so let's go back to Bruce Springsteen. We can leave that criticism of the NTMA and the Irish authorities, not just the Irish authorities, the Austrians issued 100-year bonds. They took the opportunity, right?
Yeah.
We, of course, sat in our hands and said, oh, well, you know, la, 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 and the opportunity is now gone. Now we're in a rate hike environment. Now, what Springsteen, let's come back to Springsteen, right? So Springsteen gets 500 to 600 million. We don't know. But we know that the Springsteen back catalogue was probably generating about $40 million a year.
Yeah.
So basically, Springsteen managed to get these guys to pay 15, 16, 17 times the value.
Yeah.
When interest rates are at 1%, okay, so Sony, let's say Sony bought that for 600 million.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Interest rates are at 1%. Sony doesn't have 600 million sitting in the bank, so they've got to go and borrow it, right? So they borrowed the 600 million at 1%. So it cost them 6 million. So that's the cost, right?
Right.
They're getting 40 million, so they're making 34 million. So they're happy. So that's why Springsteen got so much money for the back catalog.
Yeah.
Now American corporate interest rates are 4%. So the borrowing that our friends Sony have to do now, okay, imagine how this is costing them now, is about 24 million. So suddenly the actual value of Bruce Springsteen's back catalogue is 14 million.
Right.
Or 16 million, not 30 million to them, but Bruce has sold it. So he doesn't give a fuck. So he's the genius. So Bruce Springsteen shorted the bond market at the most perfect time. On that basis, John, we can play
the
Bruce Springsteen, but it actually shows, you know, and this is what I love about this, that basically somebody's been around for a long time, been selling gigs, been doing gigs, been involved in the real world of business.
Yeah.
Springsteen probably felt somebody knocking his door and said, we'll give you 600 million for your back catalogue. And Springsteen says, I don't need it, but it sounds like a lot. And the and the horse sense, you know what I mean? A common sense, trading sense of somebody who's been...
But he was renowned. You know, Springsteen was renowned for running a really tight ship on his tours and all
the
rest. Oh, yeah.
Even though the tours were huge.
Tours are huge. But even in the... Because there was a whole backstory about Springsteen and falling out with the record company and all the rest. And basically all he could do to make money was tour.
Gig.
And that's what he did all the way through the 70s. And he ran a really tight ship.
So he had it right down. This is basically how I'm going to make my crust.
And that's why he was called the boss as well. And it basically...
Because he's a bit of a bollocks.
He was a bit of a bollocks to work for her, apparently.
Yeah, well, that's okay. But well, here we have. So just so you know, right? The next time you see economists, Bruce Springsteen, if you're listening, Bruce, I know, if you don't make it in the rock and roll, you could easily be a hedge fund manager. You could easily be the Asbury Park Hedge Funds Inc. Okay.
Yeah. But what he's also doing is he's playing how many dates here next year? 2, 3, 4 nights, whatever it is.
I would be...
100 and something quid a ticket?
No, that's ridiculous.
Come on, Bruce.
Well, listen, man, I will be listening to Italian disco while you are stomping around with your middle-of-the-road American rock and roll, okay? Italian disco is where it is. And we're going to talk about Italy later on, but not the Italian disco, unfortunately, the Italian bond market. But my point is, Bruce Springsteen showed how it's done. the NTMA, all these people in Ireland are borrowing geniuses, didn't avail of the market when it was there. Your man singing about love and life and the whole thing.
Blue collar stuff.
Got it right. So fair play to you, Bruce. Now, the reason I talked about Bruce Springsteen and the bond market is because the entire financial world centered on the bond market. And the reason the entire financial world is centered on the bond market is people have always believed that the bond market is risk-free. This is one of the biggest mistakes in financial markets. And this week in London, what we saw was the UK bond market actually seizing up and pension funds in the UK actually running out of money. And this is what happened during a week where the news in the UK, there was just so much news that people couldn't disentangle what was important, what was not, what was politics, what was sham, what was bias, etc. I'm going to tell you that this podcast is going to explain to you what actually happened, how close the UK was to financial Armageddon in the last 4 or 5 days, but also how it's all very well sitting on the side and saying, look at the UK, same thing could happen all over Europe, could happen in the States, could happen anywhere. And the reason is, an entire generation of financial market players have been brought up with interest rates at 0 or 1%. They have no idea how to deal with a world of interest rates at 5 or 6%. And that is the shock. The shock is as much psychological as financial. So now what we're going to do, we're going to go to London. We're going to talk to Jumana Berseche, who is a CNBC reporter, former banker. This is a woman who knows this market inside out. We're going to get deep into the woods, or into the weeds, as the Americans say. We're going to explain the bond market, and then John and I are going to have a chat. So let's go to Jumana in London. Jumana, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. You know what? I'm a little tired, David. I'm not going to lie. It's been a really crazy week. I actually started the week off in Italy on Monday because I was there covering the Italian elections. And we thought on Monday morning that the biggest story for the week was going to be the election of a center-right government in Italy and that was going to drive all of the price action. But no, that was a side story. Lo and behold, by the time I landed in London on Monday afternoon, the Bank of England had just put out a statement. And from then on, I was basically standing outside the Bank of England every day for the rest of the week in very, very cold weather, I should add as well. It was
quite cold. Well, for listeners, Jumana is from Lebanon. Now, you will know that Lebanon has been featured in this podcast more than once because of yours truly going to Lebanon first on his Holliers, and then to make some television. And of course, there are many things about Lebanon we could talk about, but one is the fact that Lebanese people are not designed genetically to sit outside the Bank of England in 4 degrees and rain. Us paddies, that's all day. That's what we do, okay? Just
without a brolly.
Without a brolly, it's fine. You know. But I want to get to you about the UK. Okay, number one, happened? Number two, and this is what I really want to get to the nuts and bolts of, right? The Bank of England, and it's very important because the whole world is leveraged on bonds. The Bank of England intervened hugely in order to preserve what they called the financial system. Explain to me, what the hell went on? So the Brits announced this big budget. Everyone goes, okay, that's all very well, but frankly, it doesn't look credible. Take it from there.
Okay. So I think you're right to start out with the mini budget because up until that point, we had started to see UK assets come under pressure, but not to the extent as how much we saw after that budget was announced. And the catalyst there was not the measures that were announced to deal with the energy crisis situation, that £60 billion. No, because that was pretty much expected out of it. The big surprise was the £45 billion worth of unfunded tax cuts, which are expected to structurally shift UK borrowing much higher over the next couple of years and for it to remain so. And out of that budget, there wasn't any medium fiscal term plan to bring those debt to GDP ratios down. So that spooked out gilt investors. And for the first time, Friday, Monday, Tuesday in trading, what you saw is something called a bear steepening of the UK gilt curve, which means in English.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'll explain. So all yields were moving higher because we had this sort of fixed income sell-off phenomenon taking place. And it started accelerating after the mini budget. After Friday, the long end of the curve.
Okay, so these are bonds that you, like say, I'm lending and are borrowing for 20 years.
Yes, 20 years plus. Okay. This is the UK Treasury the bonds that they issue having, they issue a variety of durations. But what happened after Friday is the bonds with the longest duration, so 20-year, 25-year, 30-year, 40-year, and actually in this country, they issue 50-year as well, started getting hit the hardest.
Okay.
Which was a very interesting phenomenon to witness. And it is unusual in an environment where the Bank of England is saying, we're going to start hiking interest rates very aggressively to deal with the inflation problem that we have. So something was broken, right? That was the first sign that something was wrong. And if you look at the extent of the moves, in about 2 trading days, those bonds sold off 100 basis points, which is huge, a full 1 percentage point move in 24 hours, unprecedented. So the Bank of England saw this and they thought, okay, we've got to do something because this market is becoming extremely dysfunctional. Now, let me just talk you through the sequencing because we had the mini budget on Friday.
Yeah.
We had the sharp sell-off in gilts and the pound getting hit as well. By Monday morning in Asian session, the pound versus the dollar reached an all-time record low. Throughout the course of Monday, lots of people in the market thought, okay, well, maybe the Bank of England have to intervene to do something to support the currency.
Okay.
Monday afternoon, the Bank of England put out a statement. The MPC committee, this is the committee in the Bank of England that are tasked with monetary policy per se, so ensuring that inflation gets back to 2 percentage points. They put out a statement saying, we're watching market movements very, very closely. We will not hesitate to act to bring inflation back down to 2 percentage points, but they didn't come out with an emergency rate hike. And some people, as I mentioned, thought they might do that to support the currency. In effect, what they did is they deferred the decision to their next monetary policy committee decision on November the 3rd. So that was Monday. Okay. The gilt sell-off continued. So these longer dated bonds continue to move higher in yields. Tuesday, we had a warning from the IMF. You remember that?
Yep.
So the IMF came out and warned about the UK's fiscal situation. By Wednesday, the Bank of England had put out another statement. But, and here's the big distinction here. This was put out by the Financial Policy Committee. This is the committee within the Bank of England that are tasked with ensuring financial stability, the smooth transition of monetary policy, and orderly market functioning. So they saw the wreckage that had happened in the long end of the UK curve, and they said, okay, we're going to come in. We're going to buy up to £5 billion of bonds, long-duration bonds, for the next 13 days. That's a total envelope of up to £65 billion. And the reason we're doing it is to restore market functionality.
Okay, so basically, you've had a currency shock. And people
yes.
are, and because everybody focuses on the currency, because it's the pound in your pocket, et cetera, all the news media, maybe we're talking about sterling. But at the same time, what is happening is probably not investors, it's probably short sellers are selling the gilt market, I presume, at this stage, right?
So there was a bit of that before. The interesting thing about the UK bond market, so the gilts, I'm just going to call them gilts if I can. So the UK gilt market.
It's called UK exceptionalism. It's always the thing. Like everyone else calls it a bond, but they call it a gilt. Okay.
So it's about a third is roughly the ownership. So a third of the gilts are owned by the Bank of England because of years of quantitative easing.
Yep.
A third is owned by overseas investors. And a third is owned by domestic investors.
Okay.
The last one is the one I want to talk about.
Let's talk about them.
Because that was the main reason for the Bank of England to want to get involved in the long end of the duration curve. And this is why. Let's talk about the pension funds. The pension fund community in the UK, their assets have pretty much trebled over the last 10 years. They've gone from about £500 billion to £1.5 trillion in assets. Just to give you context, the total size of the UK gilt market is £2.3 trillion.
Okay.
Now, these UK pension funds, they obviously have long-dated liabilities again. So, you know, you have your pension pot. You know that at some point in the future, when you retire with defined benefits, you're set to receive a scheduled payout that isn't determined by market conditions, right? So
sure.
That pool is already set, but the value of the pool changes based on where interest rates are. So the higher interest rates are, the lower the present value is going to be because of the discounting effect. So actually, the reason this is, I'm getting a bit wonky, but the reason I bring this up is because higher interest rates are actually a good thing, quote unquote, from a liability perspective, because it means that the total value of what you have to pay out in the future has become less. So you have to own less assets against it. So actually, before all of this kicked off, and this is being lost, I think, in some of the media discussion, UK pension funds were actually in a relatively good shape from a hedge perspective. I think 4 out of 5 pension funds were actually overfunded. So they had more assets than they had liabilities, which puts them in a good situation. So when they have these long-dated liabilities, what assets do they hold against? Well, they'll hold a bit of private equity, they'll hold a bit of equities, but the bulk of it, and the estimate is about £1 trillion out of that 1.5 trillion, is held in gilts and in UK corporate bonds. So they're heavily invested in the part of the curve that the Bank of England intervened in. So what happened is once these moves started becoming very disorderly and very sharp, these pension funds who had put on levered positions, and I can explain that in a moment.
Explain that in a sec, yeah.
Yep. Started receiving margin calls from their counterparties saying, look, the value of the collateral that you've posted has dropped so much, we need you to cough up some cash in order to meet your margin requirements. And these pension funds were simply not able to get liquid assets fast enough to meet the scale of the margin calls that they were receiving.
So this is all happening Monday, Tuesday of last week. Just so we know. So you've got a pension fund, which has a huge pool of assets, like Irish pension, it could be Irish Life, it could be New Ireland, it could be any of these, right? And they, of course, but they have borrowed against those assets and bought more of the same assets, right?
Yeah.
So it's a doubling down on the bond markets. Okay.
Exactly. So it's something called a repo. Okay. And this is very common for those players. You buy a bond. I mean, it's just very common in bond markets. So you buy a bond and then you pledge that bond as collateral versus your counterparty in exchange for cash. And your counterparty will take a haircut depending on how volatile the underlying asset is. So let me give you numbers, always easier numbers. I buy £100 worth bonds.
Yep.
I give those bonds or I repo those bonds out to my counterparty.
So you're basically going to a bank and you're saying, here's collateral. I have cash? Okay, like a normal person would do. You're remortgaging the shop. You're remortgaging the house.
Yeah. And then I get, let's say, instead of £100, I get £90 back.
Okay.
So then, because that's the haircut, the value of the risk that the counterparty...
That's the cushion the counterparty wants to
that's
keep.
That's the cushion. And then I've got £90. So then what do? I go buy another gilt. And then I do the same thing again. So it just sort of turbo effects, right? Yeah. So they're sitting on all of these levered plays of bonds in their portfolio. And then the value of that portfolio starts sharply declining. And so one thing that I flagged, actually yesterday I put out a tweet about it, is that initially this wasn't a solvency issue, this was a liquidity issue. But as we know, obviously liquidity issues do eventually become solvency issues. But primarily on Monday, Tuesday, it was a liquidity issue. And these pension funds literally just had a cash flow problem. So the Bank of England came in to restore some stability to that market so that these pension funds could have a couple of weeks to generate the cash to meet the margin calls that were required of them, okay? And that's kind of what happened. So the Bank of England said they were going to buy up to £5 billion of bonds a day. On the first day, they only had to buy £1 billion. It's a bit like one of those, like the ECB OMT. It's almost one of those things that they threaten to do, but
they threaten, it's a bit like a bank run. You know, the thing about a bank run is that the bank, there's a run in the bank if you expect there to be no money in the ATM. The minute somebody says, you know what, don't worry, there is money in the ATM, the bank run subsides.
Exactly.
Because it's a psychological thing. It's
psychological. So much of that is psychological. So just to give you an idea, I was looking at one of the bonds this morning. So the bonds that mature in 2061, they got to a high of 4.8% on Tuesday. They're now trading down at 3.3%. So we've rallied back 150 basis points from this intervention from Bank of England. So, I mean, I guess you could say they've been successful, but you know, we've got to see how this all plays out with the pension fund community. But remember, this is just one part of what the Bank of England have done this week.
So this is, you see, for listeners, this is what Bismarck was asked, how does democracy work? And he said, it's a little bit like making sausages. You really don't want to see what goes on in the process. Just eat the sausages, right? And this is the same idea about financial markets, okay? This is why we're going into what the Americans call a deeper dive, simply because what most of us don't think is you buy a pension, you say, okay, fine. And you buy one of the big, in the case of Ireland, an Irish insurance company or the UK pension, and you don't really think, and there's, you know, you turn on the news and there's a crisis in the currency. You're like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever. It's over there. I'm not really an exporter. It doesn't really bother me. You know, frankly, you know, if it means that traveling abroad is going to be a bit more expensive, I can deal with that. But what you don't see is the sausage making. And this is what we're talking about. This is the unpleasant, the entrails of the financial system.
One of my favorite tweets this week was from Have I Got News For You? That was quite witty, but this one I thought was really good. Economists pray for a swift end to the financial crisis, as sooner or later it will become apparent that absolutely nobody understands how bonds work.
Exactly. And exactly. So the whole point of today's podcast, and I do apologize to some listeners, right, who are used to much more zippy and zangy and top line things, is basically to explain the bond market. And the reason I want to do this is I have a fear that we are in what they call a doom loop for bonds. So what happened, and this comes from my time working in the central bank. I remember working in the Irish Central Bank during a currency crisis, right? And what you realize, everything is interlinked and everything's interwoven. Lots of stuff are on the never, never. And there's a whole sense of it'll be okay, right? But what we saw in the UK, and I believe, and maybe you can come back on this, Hugh, I believe that the reason the IMF got so antsy is the IMF are thinking, look, they don't actually care really about the UK, but what they're thinking is what's going on in the UK could go on everywhere else.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, just on that point, S&P also put the UK on negative outlook yesterday as well. So it's not just the IMF, you know, people everywhere are taking note of what's happened. I think, you know, when I was saying at the beginning, and perhaps I got too much into the weeds, the difference between the Financial Policy Committee and the MPC Committee is because when you think about central banks and what central banks' mandates are, they're just tasked essentially with ensuring that inflation stays at an adequate rate of around 2 percentage points. And now, globally, central banks are in a situation where inflation is running at extremely high levels, let's say, you know, 10 percentage points in most countries in Europe right now, which is a full 8 percentage points where it's supposed to be, which on paper, you know, if they're doing what it says on the tin, they've got to hike quite aggressively to get inflation back to those levels again. But all of that is going to come at a cost to the economy as well. And the main issue here is, you know, what happened in the UK is it almost they had to subvert their price stability mandate.
Sure, to bail out.
Exactly, in the name of a dysfunctional, of dealing with a dysfunctional market. So the contradictory thing that happened in the Bank of England announcement this week is they've said we are going to start tightening, hiking interest rates, and also selling down £80 billion worth of gilts that we own because of quantitative easing on an annual basis. They had scheduled this to happen. It was going to happen. 2 days later, they announced that they're buying £65 billion of gilts, long end gilts, to restore market functionality. And that is the doom loop, because the more governments go out with this fiscal expansion and come out with these unfunded tax cuts like they did in the UK, for example, the more pressure there's going to be on issuance at a time when inflation is very high, at a time when central banks are looking to hike, but that could really cause a lot of damage, as we saw in the UK, which puts more pressure on the central banks to restore some normalcy. And so this is why many players in the market thought, well, it's going to be impossible for these central banks to sell down their assets or sell down the bonds that they own and at the same time hike aggressively, because it will just unleash mayhem.
And so the big question is, it's all very well, central banks, okay, we're coming to a close. You know, who's going to buy these assets, right? So you have we're going to focus on the UK because you have a current account deficit, which means your living standard is rented, not earned, okay? You're borrowing all the time. You have a massive budget deficit, and that's an ideological shift. And unless our friends, Truss and our mates do a total U-turn, which is unlikely, they're going to do this. You have a currency that has proved itself to be very unstable. It goes up, it goes down, it's unstable. You have long-term interest rates going up, because of inflation, and you have a central bank that needs to actually try and get, as you said, inflation down to 2% over, let's say, a 2 or 3 year period, because it ain't going to happen very, very quickly, right?
Yeah.
Who buys the UK in this world?
Yeah. I mean, it's the question I've been asking as well, because as we said at the beginning, a third of the gilts are owned by Bank of England. Not only are they, in theory, no longer buying, except for this week, they're selling. So that's one participant gone. Overseas investors, up until a couple of months ago, were very happy to buy the UK market. They switched to selling over the last couple of months. And I think what's happened over the last couple of months, and you hear it, you know, the likes of international players, you know, Ken Griffin from Citadel was on Delivering Alpha, the CNBC Delivering Alpha conference. And he was saying, look, this is really unprecedented because it is a major market economy losing credibility in international investors' eyes. It's not easy to bring that credibility back once it's lost.
This is exactly what I'm saying. So you're absolutely, it's a major market. It was the reserve currency in people's lifetimes. And, you know, in our parents' lifetimes, it was the reserve currency. You know, if you take bad decisions all the time and you do that constantly over a 5 or 6 year period, as I believe the UK has done, eventually your credibility diminishes. Now, you're Lebanese. You see what happens in a small country when credibility disappears. Yeah. I believe your husband's Argentinian, right? We were down in Argentina, and I remember making the point to John that Britain was going to turn into Argentina, and people said that couldn't happen, right? There's obviously lots and lots of things going on in the UK that make a difference, but can we just end that idea that good countries can go bad?
Yes. I mean, most certainly. And I think, you know, there are a couple of things I would say to watch out for here. The UK government is scheduled to give its actual formal budget on November the 23rd. And what the market really wants to see is that they have a grasp of how dire the public finances situation is, and that they have some sort of a plan to bring down debt to GDP over the medium term. That's really what investors need to see. And then also, you know, the Bank of England have to go big with the hike to support the currency and reassure investors that they've got the inflation situation under control. But at the same time, need to ensure the smooth functioning of the gilts market. It's a really difficult balancing act. I just want to say, because you were talking about the doom loop globally, you know, we've been talking a lot about Bank of England, but I mean, it's the same for everywhere.
Precisely.
Right? And then you see it now. I mentioned on Monday, I was in Italy. You know, Europe is in a bit of a hot spot as well. Remember, ECB had been running negative rates for a very, very long period of time. And so that artificially kept borrowing costs very low because they'd been engaging also in quantitative easing, buying up bonds of all of these countries. And now that's set to reverse. And these countries, by the way, are sitting on much higher debt to GDP levels than the UK is. UK is not at 100%, it's about 95 percentage points. Italy is at 150 percentage points.
But this is where I wanted to go before we go, right? So it's all very well to say it's the UK, and the UK has got its own specific idiosyncratic problems, okay? And they're deep, and they're cultural, and they're political, and they're Brexit-related, all that stuff, right? But you flip to Italy, you flip to Spain, you flip to, you know, countries like France. All these countries have precisely the same game going on, which has been the pension funds have been, you know, buying the bonds of the country, going to banks, repoing those, buying more bonds, et cetera, et cetera. The central bank, the European Central Bank, has been involved initially at least 3 or 4 times in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
To what extent is this, are we talking about in the next little while, contagion?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a really valid point because I watch, for example, where Italian bond yields are trading on an absolute level. They're about 4.5 percentage points. But by the way, 4.5 percentage points is the highest they've been since the European financial crisis.
Yeah, because since 2012.
Because obviously base rates are a lot higher than they were. On a spread basis, we're about 250 basis points to Germany. Back in 2018, which is the last Italian elections we had, when we had, if you remember, an anti-establishment party called Five Star Movement come in and ally themselves with another anti-establishment party. They were deemed to be, you know, not European friendly. Back then, the spread got as wide as 300. So, you know, you probably got a bit more to go. But even at the peak of the European financial crisis, European sovereign crisis, that spread got to 500 basis points. So we are actually at quite uncomfortable levels now.
Yeah.
And the ECB have also said, you know, when they started talking about hiking earlier on this year, they realized that the reaction was pretty extreme in the likes of countries like Italy. And they said, well, we won't be able to get away with these hikes without, again, creating some form of a doom loop. So they created something called an anti-fragmentation tool. They said, you know, if there is an unwarranted, what they call...
It's almost Putin-esque. It sounds like almost a special military operation.
It literally is. It's a special bond operation.
Yeah, exactly. To annex part of the Italian bond market. The bond exactly. Market. The donuts of the Italian bond market.
And so they said, so long as Italy sort of behaves in line with the EU fiscal rules, etc., and there is an unwarranted spread widening, then the ECB can always step in to support that bond market, which isn't that dissimilar to what the Bank of England did. Exactly. Yeah. So they're in this weird situation where they have to hike, but also buy bonds at the same time. It doesn't lead to mayhem.
So just before you go, let's go back to Beirut. Okay, let's go back to Lebanon. And Irish people remember what happened here when the housing market collapsed. We went from being very rich to very poor in 2 days. People say, well, how did that happen, right? The banking system collapsed, et cetera, et cetera. Lebanon, you go from a situation, you've got a reasonably strong currency, people are going out there buying stuff, et cetera, to banks collapsing. What is it like to live or have your parents or your family in a country where the financial market goes from stability to mayhem?
It's horrible. I don't think people appreciate how difficult the transition has been. As you mentioned, the currency was artificially pegged to the dollar for a very, very long time. It was too strong. It was always too strong. Back when I grew up in Lebanon, $1 was equivalent to 1,500 Lebanese lira. It's now about 30,000. So $1 is worth 30,000. The World Bank estimates that about 65% of the population are now living below the poverty line.
Wow.
It is immense what has happened in Lebanon. It is extremely sad. And, you know, there are loads, a whole bunch of issues we can talk about there. But I think, you know, that wasn't just a monetary phenomenon. It's mainly a political phenomenon because of really bad decision-making by people in power and a lot of corruption. But yeah, it makes the country unlivable. Like you go into a shop at the beginning of the month and buy a loaf of bread. At the end of the month, the loaf of bread costs a little bit more because the inflation is happening so quickly that it's difficult for shopkeepers to keep up with.
Yeah, no, I mean, the fascinating thing is, I mean, Lebanon's an extreme outlier. Argentina is an extreme outlier. But right now we're talking about Pakistan. We're talking about, there are many, many millions of people around the world living in situations of financial calamity that were living in situations of relative security not that long ago. And when I look at the UK, I'm not saying the UK is going to go that way, but the point is finance can be very unforgiving.
Yes.
It can happen very, very quickly, and you can lose control very quickly.
Yes, yeah. And I think also these many, many years of low negative interest rates have artificially inflated financial assets everywhere and inflated debt everywhere because you've managed to borrow at such low borrowing costs for such a long time. And we've all been warning that there's going to be a day of reckoning. Seems like we're getting close to that point now.
Jumana, on that very, very uplifting note, that's extremely
I'm so
uplifting.
Sorry.
Listen, that was fantastic. That was wonderful, wonderful, wonderful stuff. As I said, we got into the weeds, we got into the sausage making. But you know what? The funny thing about finance, you got to understand what's going on. And as you said, many economists have no rashers. Jumana, we will talk to you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Now, Mac, I can't pretend that I understood all of that.
In fairness, it was about 4 years of corporate finance in university in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So don't worry your head.
My head is spinning,
head is melted. I'll explain it to you. Don't be worried about it.
But come here. There are a few things that I wanted to ask you about. Number one, you know, after what they're calling kamikaze economics, but after the crash of sterling, it has recovered now.
Yeah.
And that's simply because the Bank of England
is intervening, is buying stuff.
So basically buying all the bonds.
Yeah, it's also buying the currency as well.
Right.
So what the Bank of England has come in is they've said they're buying the bonds. Now, when you're buying bonds, right, you know, basically what the Bank of England is trying to stabilize the bond market. It's also buying the currency. It's called foreign exchange intervention. So the Bank of England sits on foreign reserves.
Yeah.
And when the Bank of England decides, okay, we're going to stabilize sterling, what they come into, they sell their foreign reserves, they buy sterling in the market. So that generates a demand for sterling in the market.
Yeah.
When the financial markets see the Bank of England buying sterling, what they think is, okay, wait a sec, are we going to bet against the Bank of England? Because it's always got more firepower than us.
Yeah.
So those speculators, what they do is they cover their shorts, right? They have short positions, they cover them, they square their positions, and they disappear from the market. Okay?
Okay.
Right? And the Bank of England, so that's why sterling's going back up. It's also going back up because everyone thinks, okay, hold on a second. The Bank of England has already said it's going to increase interest rates, right? So let's say British interest rates go to 5 or 6%, which is where people believe they will end up, right?
Yeah.
That means vis-a-vis, for example, European rates, which are now only forecast to go by 2%. It means it'll be a 3% free. If you can buy sterling and you think sterling's going to stabilize, you're getting 3% more yield over European. So there's a natural demand for the UK.
Okay.
But the problem is all of this is artificially maintained because exactly what Juman was saying. It's the Bank of England buying everything.
It's a massive
Bank of England bailout of the bond market.
But also it means that they've spent their whole reserves.
Well, this is why the IMF could eventually come into the UK because they might run out of reserves, right?
Yeah.
Because eventually the thing is you can print your own currency, but you can't print anybody else's currency.
Yeah.
So at a certain stage, the UK are going to have to actually come up with not just a credible system, but a 4 or 5 year plan that makes sense so that they bring down inflation.
Yeah.
They bring down the current account deficit, they stabilize the currency, all the while the UK housing market, right? Again, this bond mathematics sounds esoteric to us, right?
Mm.
And because it's our pension fund, we think, oh, okay, fair enough. Okay, it's pensions, right? But imagine you are now a UK homeowner, right? And lots of people that I know of our generation who bought their houses in the 90s, right? And those houses were quite cheap in the UK, right?
Yeah.
Or in the 2000s, right? And then what happened? Maybe their kids grew up and they remortgaged the house, right? To pay for college fees. Because, okay, you know, the UK is very expensive for all that sort of stuff, right? You said, well, I don't want my kids having a student loan, so which is about 10 or 12 grand a year, blah, blah. So all those people have remortgaged, but they remortgaged their houses or bits of their houses at 1%. They're going to have to finance that at 5%.
Yeah,
right? That means exactly like the Bruce Springsteen mathematics.
It's
exactly the same as the Bruce Springsteen mathematics. House prices have to fall in the UK. They can't rise.
Mm.
They have to fall. They're already been falling. And of course, if the house prices fall, if the Tories can't deliver house price inflation, they lose. That's the only trick they have.
Right. Okay.
Basically, they say to all the Red Trouser Brigade,
don't worry,
your house prices are going up, vote for us, right?
Yeah.
This is why I think that we're talking about a party that is in ruins. And you remember remember we said about Argentina? And I said it can't happen. One of my points is that good countries can go bad, not quickly, but if you keep making these bad decisions time and time and time and time and time again, it does erode your credibility. But I mean, what Jumana was saying is, and this is the interesting thing, is these bond crises, I will think we're going into a winter of bond crises in Europe.
Right. And what does that mean then?
Well, that means, you see exactly what she was explaining, right?
Yeah.
So all this game of pension funds buying bonds, the Brits call them gilts, but they're actually the same thing.
Right.
And the reason they buy bonds is they're perceived to be more secure than equities, right? So they buy bonds, but they don't just sit in those bonds. They repo those bonds, which means basically they give the bonds to a bank. The bank gives them cash, right? And then what they do is they buy more bonds. So loads and loads of pension funds, or most pension funds, I actually say every pension fund, has this extraordinary amount of borrowing that they're sitting on. Now, what happens with all that borrowing is the thing called margin call. If the price of those assets, those bonds, falls, right, the people who lent you the money, the banks, will say, well, hold on a second, we want more security now because those assets have fallen value.
Yeah, of course,
we want a cushion, we want collateral. Now, what do you do if there's a margin call? You need to raise cash. But if you're only sitting on bonds, you need to sell bonds. So this is the doom loop. So bond prices are falling. You're told you've got to raise cash. The only way you can get cash is sell your assets. The only asset you have is bonds. So you're selling more. So that's how you get into this doom loop, that basically the crisis precipitates more selling. And we're back to our friend, the Minsky moment.
Right? Yes.
And then the only backstop in the whole thing is the central bank. So the ECB in our case. Now the ECB can therefore do what the Bank of England has just done, which is bail out the Italians or bail out the Greeks, or maybe even bail out us, who knows, right? I mean, at the moment, Ireland looks really pretty and all is good.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about the Irish economy on Thursday's podcast. I'm going to digest what exactly happened last week, what exactly this week, and where Ireland goes. But, you know, Portugal, Spain, Italy, Greece, all these countries have exactly the same systemic risks as the UK. They just don't have as mad politicians. Okay? Like your one Meloni is much less mad than Liz Truss. I know her. I just like the fact she's actually called Meloni. Okay? It's like Mrs. Meloni, Miss Meloni. But at the end of the day, John, if you have bad politics and over-leveraged finance at a time when economies are actually struggling, you've got chaos.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.